Real Nerds is a proud partner of the Denver Podcast Network. In the shadow of the mountains,
we speak.
Hi, my name is Paul Caroli, and I host a podcast called Changing Denver. It's a monthly show about our city's physical spaces, how we make them, and how they make us. But it's so much more than that. It's the conversations, ideas, and stories that define Denver's perpetual state of flux. Find more from our team at changingdenver.com and join the conversation on Twitter at Changing Denver. Denver's changing. We can help.
Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Georges Genty, and you are listening to Real Nerds Podcast.
Hey everybody, here's an exciting Real Nerds interview that we did at Denver Comic Con 2018. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Denver Comic Con 2018, and we have an exclusive interview with author extraordinaire, Liv. Liv, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name's Liv. As he said, I write stuff. I have a book out now called In the Mind of Revenge. It's thriller with a little bit of medical sci-fi in it. It's Ooh. Part of a series called The Shamed Series. And then I have another sci-fi adventure book coming out in spring of 2019. I don't have an exact date yet. That one's called Counting Bodies Like Stars, and the whole thing takes place in space, as you might have guessed from the title.
I have to say, when I was reading your bio, I think In the Mind of Revenge is an awesome name for a book.
Thanks.
So how did you come up with that name? Because it intrigued me.
Yeah, I've had a weird publishing experience, but the first publisher I worked with on that book, the editor actually had read some sample pages before they decided if, you know, they wanted to take on the project or not. And she emailed me back and said, I love it. It's just like I'm in the mind of revenge. And I was like, can I steal that and make that the title? That's perfect. She said, yeah, that's great. So someone else actually came up with it.
It's really cool. It's really provocative. And it makes you think. What's it about?
So the main character, Shame, you kind of come in on Shame around 17, 18. Senior in high school, total outcast, gets picked on, has been picked on, you know, all through grade school. And they finally decide they're going to do something about it. So one of the, they get tagged with all kinds of different, you know, horrible nicknames that really intelligent bullies come up with.
Sure.
And one of them is just calling Shame the Shamed. You don't actually ever know Shame's real name. So that's why this sounds kind of goofy. But so Shame ends up tagging the back of a leather jacket, the Shamed, as kind of like a fuck you to the bullies. Well, they don't like that. So that's when Shame gets like the worst beating they've ever gotten, ends up in a coma in the hospital. And then, you know, while they're asleep, that's when the medical sci-fi comes in. Experimental surgery. So when Shame wakes up, they're just done with it. And they decide to go on a revenge rampage, essentially.
Nice.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into writing? Where are you from?
I'm originally from Vermont. That's where I was born. My whole family's from there. My mom ended up moving us all down to Texas when she got a job working for Child Watch, which I don't think it's an organization anymore, but she literally used to save kidnapped children, which is super cool. I kind of have a superhero mother.
Nice.
So we moved down here. I've been writing. I've loved to write forever. Since I was really young, I actually have an entire box of like old things that I used to write, which was really cool for me to go through. But I think the point in time when I was like, yeah, this is like a thing that maybe I should look into was fifth grade, because my English teacher had us write and read out loud just stories. And I think that we were trying to work on repetition, like as a device in literature. And so I had, I was playing a lot of Frogger at the time with, you know, the joystick one on the computer that was like 3D and it was like the best graphics ever. I was playing that Frogger a lot. And so I wrote a story about a frog who just constantly hopped across the road. That was my repetition, hop, hop, hop. Well, by the end of it, the class had like picked up on it. So like everybody was like yelling, hop, hop, hop in the class. And that was really fun. And my teacher after that said, you know, Liv, one day you're going to write a novel and I can't wait to read it. And that like stuck with me hardcore. So when the shame started coming to me, like as an idea and a concept, and I started writing it, once I got far enough in, I want to say like 50,000 words, I was like, this could be a whole book. And maybe that's a real thing I could do, because one time this one lady said maybe that was a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I wrote that, and she actually came to one of my signings in Houston. That's where I went to school and grew up. And that was really cool. It was weird to have your fifth grade teacher bring you a bottle of wine and be like, I'm so proud of you.
Or did she say, I always knew it. Yeah. I knew
she
it.
She did.
She told you.
I mean, essentially. So I actually dedicated the book to her.
Oh.
Yeah. Which was really cool. And it was great because obviously the content of the book is really dark. And it's, like you said, it's pretty provocative. So it's cool that I have a open-minded fifth grade teacher and that she enjoyed the writing for the writing's sake and not necessarily because she thought the topic was super compelling.
Well, now that you're a published author, you can go back and write a children's story called Hop, Hop, Hop about a frog and then go see her again and be like, see, I can do everything.
I can do all the things.
I can do everything you told me I could do.
It's really amazing how often that is the story where somebody says, like, well, it was a teacher who saw this. I mean, I have the same thing. Like, there's so many people where you take for granted how much influence those teachers have just in saying a positive word to kids that, you know, can direct your whole life. That's an awesome story.
Yeah, we should officially petition for all teachers to get paid more.
I know exactly what you mean. My teacher told me I'd be amount to nothing, and here I am, nothing.
Well, either way, it motivated you to do something, right?
Yeah, you know what? I'm like, I'm going to prove him wrong. I'm going to do nothing at a Comic-Con and be successful at it. It worked out really well for me.
Do what you're good at.
Yeah.
what other books do you like to read? Who's authors that you like?
Oh my gosh, that changes all the time. There was a period in time in high school when I was super into World War II fiction.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's something about like that whole deranged Nazi thing that's just so intriguing.
Oh, it wasn't the like the valor in the battle. No, it's the really deranged Nazis that really pull me in.
No, it really is, and I love all the different takes on the conspiracies and the actual like experiments they were really doing and all that stuff. So I got into a lot of that stuff. Although I think the last one I read a book called Daisy Chain Wars, and that's a YA, and she's like 15 or 16 and she decides she wants to be a nurse and all this stuff. That book was sad as hell. And I was like, okay, this is a little too real and World War II is not fun to read about. So
here for more for the happy World War II stuff?
More like the spy stuff where
the Hellboy World War II, I think is what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah, that. Like, I preferred Quentin Tarantino's take on the whole thing.
Sure, yeah.
Like, that's more my preference where, like, we get lots of cool vengeance and stuff.
Yeah.
So I ended up moving back into fantasy because, you know, I loved Harry Potter growing up. Mm. I think Chamber of Secrets came out when I was like 11.
Oh my gosh, I'm so old.
Yeah, I was definitely like just barely leaving elementary school, going into middle school when that started.
I remember going to like those midnight launches and looking around like, I am the oldest person here. I'm like, I don't care, I'm reading Harry Potter.
Yeah, when the people in line are asking you like, oh, is this for your son? No.
No, it's for me. I need to know what happens in the Goblet of Fire, okay?
Well, but you do, right?
You really do.
You have to know.
You know, I actually kind of miss that, you know, because I'll never forget when I went to Barnes & Noble for the last book, and there's thousands of people there, and they had these just stacks and stacks of the book. Mm-hmm. That, to me, that's so cool. I love when people read.
Yeah,
you know, because I don't like not read people, because I don't like not smart people, and I think you help us bridge that gap as authors.
Well, I actually was thinking about that a lot lately, how there's so much fiction out there that actually helps expand people's mind, teach them lessons. Obviously, morals are often taught through fiction and things like that. So I know that there are actual science studies out there that say, you know, reading does actually make you smarter, but they did a really cool one specifically on people who read Harry Potter. They did it over like 20-year time span. And if you identified with Harry in any way, you ended up being this super empathetic, into the underdog kind of person when you grew up as an adult, and I just thought that was so cool.
I so identify with Harry. My wife is is a Slytherin, and I'm like, you don't want to be the hero. You don't want to be Gryffindor. You don't want to be selfless. She's like, no, I want to be metal. Oh, okay. My wife doesn't talk like that at all. That's what I'm just saying she sounds like. But do you like Deadpool, too? You're totally rocking a bunch of Deadpool stuff.
Oh, yeah, I love Deadpool.
Yeah?
Yeah. My brother was always super into comics growing up, which meant I was the opposite of that, because anything your little brother thinks is cool is super lame.
Yeah, totally.
Well, now I'm like, Tino, I just learned about this new character. And he's like, oh, yeah, and this version of this and this version of that. Well, anyway, because of him, he used to make me, when we were in high school, we shared a car and he refused to get a license. He's only a year younger than me, but he refused to get a license. So I had to, like, drive him everywhere. And he used to make me take him to the premieres of all the... That's when they really started doing all the superhero movies. So I used to, like, have to take him to the premiere of, like, X-Men and Watchmen and, like, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it freaking grew on me. Like, how can it not? So then I started, you know, researching more. And I think the first hero that I really thought was cool was Loki. I'm really into anti-heroes.
Yep. Of course.
If you read my book, like, that main character is totally an anti-hero. So I really got into Loki, bought some of those comics, enjoyed that. And then the Deadpool movie came out. And I... basically pissed my pants in the theater, and I was like, this is the coolest character that's ever been written in any medium, and now I'm like all about it.
I mean, he's not as cool as Spider-Man. Close.
Ew.
Spider-Man is amazing. Literally.
Yeah, he's so amazing he has to tell people he's amazing.
He doesn't. No one likes Spider-Man. I'm pretty sure Deadpool's the one who tells people he's amazing.
Fair.
Literally. Like, looks at the camera and like, hey, I'm awesome. Yeah, in comics and in movies.
It's funny.
Spider-Man is selfless and just does it. He's the hero everybody wants to be.
He's the Harry Potter-esque underdog, if you will.
Thank you. He is the Harry Potter of the comic book world.
Yeah, I'm a Ravenclaw, so I kind of think Gryffindors are stupid.
You do.
Yeah.
Fucking Ravenclaws.
I love that you reveal that after you tell the whole story about it's so great that if you read Harry Potter, it makes you a sweet person, but not me.
So do you go back and read your old stuff? Like you said, you had a collection of it, and you'd be like, man, this is not good, and
oh,
look how far
I've
come. Or do you see it sometimes soon go, oh, that's a great idea, I can expand on it?
Yeah. I can tell the times when I sat down and wrote and it kind of forced it a little, and the times I sat down and wrote and just let it come to me.
Yeah.
The times that it's forced, I'm like, this is the worst writing that anyone has ever written, and I don't deserve to be writing anymore.
Have you read my articles on our website? Because you would know what bad writing is.
No, I haven't, but now I'm going to.
You have to.
And I'm going to comment on all of them.
Please
do.
Please do.
Emojis that make no sense.
Just sweet.
Just copy and paste, like, hate comments from YouTube onto his articles.
Please. Please. No, that's so cool, though. I mean, it has to be cool, though, seeing your career trajectory then, like being able to look back at what you've written and see where you're at.
Yeah, yes. And I would say I'm one of those people that kind of was a little too ignorant to know that maybe they should slow down a little bit. Mm-hmm. So my writing skills have improved vastly. So like looking at stuff I read or wrote, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I'm like, wow, that's really bad. And I'm so glad that I'm past that now. Yeah.
So I ask all writers this because I want one writer to say this is what they do. So I picture their office, and at the top is like the character's name. And then like Sherlock Holmes, they have it like all branched out with yarn and its plots and everything. Do you do that?
No.
Oh, one writer eventually will.
Yeah, one will. I've seen things like that. Mostly I've seen that when you do like all character plotting. It's not just Sherlock. Mm-hmm. It's like every character that you have, and you cross the lines like where all of their goals intersect, because then those are your conflict points. I can't be overstructured. I feel stifled, and so I do very loose plotting, you know, like what are my 10 biggest scenes, and then I'll just write from one scene to the next and the next and the next.
Gotcha. So that's always leads into your process of writing.
Mm-hmm.
So is that how you do? You have ideas and then branch out from there, or do you start and then you just keep writing and eventually the story just takes a shape of itself?
I kind of start there at first, because I'll get ideas and snippets. I normally get like bits of dialogue or a character themselves, and I don't necessarily know what their story is going to be, what world they're going to be in, what's going to be their motivation. So I'll kind of just write, like free form write. I think pantsing is what they call it. I just pants it for a little bit, and then once I have an idea of who this character is and what they want the most in the entire world, then I'll go back and start thinking about plot and structure and those kinds of things.
And do you tend to lean more towards the fantasy, or do your books encompass a lot? Because it kind of sounds like there's also horror in your books. And is there any romance, or is it all just revenge?
Well, my main character has a love interest. It doesn't get realized, but it's a big motivation for that character. Only because Shame, like, lacks a sense of self-love and absolutely external love. So that's a big driver. You know, when you don't have love in your life, what else are you going to pursue? So it, kind of, not really. I wouldn't say it's romantic at all. It's actually more creepy and stalkery.
Nice.
To have, you know, essentially a sociopath kind of coming after you because they love you. I don't think that's cute. But there's a love interest. And then in Counting Bodies Like Stars, there is some, I would say, romantic tension between two of the main characters. But I use that less of as a device for romance and more as a device for her to really, the main character is female, for her to deal with a lot of the emotional stuff that she's just, like, been ignoring. Like, she's been killing all these bad guys as a way to, like, cope with her family dying. Yeah. So she's just, like, she's like Punisher, you know, how he just, like, kills people to deal with his emotional rage. Mm-hmm. That's what she's been doing.
Wow. You're so, like, friendly, and your book sounds so dark. I think it's awesome. You have, like, the coolest titles, Counting Bodies Like Stars.
Thank you.
Gosh.
Thank you.
That's why I'm not creative. I'm like, I call it, like, dead people.
In space.
I actually think, I love really, like, campy, kitschy stuff.
Me too.
So those titles, I think, work really well for that kind of thing. Maybe that's what you need to do.
Yes.
You just need to embrace your style of creativity.
That's right. Because, you know, when I literally buy movies sometimes through on Blu-ray just for the name alone. It sounds totally stupid, like Daughters of Satan.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is. And I'm sure it's garbage, but
the cover's cool.
The cover's cool.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible name for a movie, but I think it's awesome. Stuff like Kiss Me Deadly. I think those are awesome names
for
movies.
Yeah, I feel like you and I would enjoy watching movies together.
We probably would.
Yeah, my partner hates that I like crap movies and crap TV, but I really do.
The best.
Like, I mean, speaking of titles, Zombievers. Have you guys seen that?
I went to the premiere. And that is a true story.
No, you didn't. I did.
And so when I'm there and I'm like, oh, this is pretty funny. These zombies are eating people. And then when they, like, actually turn the people into beavers that are zombies, I'm like, this is pretty amazing.
It's one of the best cinematic exploits of all time.
Oh, I'm not going to disagree with you.
Of course.
Because
you're not.
It's animatronic. There's no CG. It's animatronic beavers. And they look pretty bad. But
oh, they're horrible. And my favorite one is when the beaver's, like, in the kitchen and they're just, like, standing around the island. And I'm like, just leave the kitchen.
Yeah.
Just
but
get
they
out
don't.
Of there. And they're just, like, screaming in the corner, like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I'd do if I saw a zombie beaver. Maybe just kick it. I don't know. Because they also have the shots of the movie, too, of, like, the cabin on the outside and, like, the zombie beavers, like, popping up. Love it.
I remember Googling, like, how fast can beavers actually move? Because there's no way these people can't
outrun
them.
How fast can they move?
I don't remember because this is, like, years ago.
Yeah.
But I just remember going, these people could run and it would be fine.
Yeah. That is awesome. What other, like, crazy movies do you like besides Zombievers?
Huge fan of the entire Sharknado series. I'm just a sci-fi gal, so anything on the sci-fi channel.
They're so ridiculous.
I'm into. Yeah. So I love that. I'm trying to think of any 80s, like, action film.
You should give Two-Headed Shark Attack starring Brooke Hogan
a shot.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Huge fan of that one. Isn't she in another one?
She's also
like
in Sand
Sharks. Sharks?
Yes.
Yeah. Sand Sharks.
Someone else has seen Sand Sharks.
Oh, fuck yeah. You and me are the two rentals on Amazon Prime. Like,
Oh,
we on our podcast, we talked about Sand Sharks for months.
Yeah.
Because they released, like, the poster. And we're like, oh, we're so watching this. But we don't want to spend money on it. We're going to so watch this when it comes out. And then it came out, and, like, a month later, it was on Amazon Prime. Or did we buy it?
I may have bought it.
I think I did spend three bucks on it. And it is.
Yeah,
I heard there's avalanche sharks. I haven't seen that one.
Oh, man.
That one's
good.
Sand sharks is better. But avalanche sharks is like, worth a go.
My problem with sand sharks was there were so many, like, homages to Jaws. Like, Two-Headed Shark Attack was just a really good piece of shit film. Like,
yeah.
They didn't know they were bad. I mean, they knew they were bad because it was called Two-Headed Shark Attack. But it wasn't like, hey, here's a send-up of Jaws but with sand sharks. No. This was just, the shark has two heads. And it was amazing. Like, ugh.
And that's the thing with those movies is you can't, if you're an actor or someone who's making them, you can't take it seriously.
Right.
I think that's the big problem sometimes with those movies. That's when they lose me, when they treat it so seriously. I'm like, nah, I would be on there and be like, sharks, like when Conan O'Brien shows up in them or something, you know?
Yeah.
You got to be that guy. Because I love, which one is Conan in again?
Conan.
I don't know. He plays like this really like snobby like yacht guy who has like a campy like captain's coat and a thing, and he talks like this. It's totally stupid and amazing.
Oh man,
I see too many of them. I don't remember.
Yeah. I've seen too many of them.
And you think you would, but they all start blending together. Unless they're
so
classics like Sand Sharks.
Yeah, I mean Sand Sharks
or Zombievers. I mean.
Is there a shitty movie awards? Because if not, I feel like Real Nerds should start one.
There is, but it's not good. Uh-huh. Right? Like,
well,
they do the Razzies every year, but
Razzies
that's not
don't
really
count.
For... Yeah, like, that's
those
not for
count.
This.
Because
I want awards for real pieces of shit, like, actually bad movies.
So, James is a writer, and he used to write this great article on our website called Shit Show Review.
Yeah.
And he would take movies like that and just review them.
But I was reviewing them under like, they got more stars if they were a good movie to watch while drinking with all your friends over. Right, like that's what you
How
wanted.
How do you watch any of those without playing a drinking game?
Right,
just
yeah.
wondering.
So the whole point was like I was going through all of these films and trying to find like what are the movies that would be fun to have your friends over and watch and make fun of and all of that. And I need to do it again.
Yep. But yeah, we're real a sophisticated podcast. I mean. Yeah.
Actually, I would say my favorite part now it's just us tooting our own horns. Welcome to your interview, Liv. I think my favorite part of our podcast every week is when we do what the Blu-rays are that are releasing that week, and I always push the shitty horror movies to the end.
Yes.
So we can really take our time, read the synopsis aloud together, look at the cover and how great it is, because there's garbage coming out every week, and some of it is gold.
All hail the garbage.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
The one that Conan does have, the Sharktopus versus Terracuda.
That's right.
That's right.
Sharktopus.
The Terracuda.
The Terracuda eats him.
Roger Corman directed Conan's scene. That was it.
That's four different animals in two different bodies attacking one person.
Well, that's what we do. Have you seen the previews for the new The Meg with Jason Statham?
Oh, gosh, it's so good.
And it's a megalodon, giant shark, eating people.
But it's being taken
yes,
seriously
please.
By studios.
Yes.
There's money behind
it. It looks
yes,
like a $70 million movie.
It's about time.
Right.
I'm sorry. Screw the Oscar winners that make you cry and feel something. I want to watch Megalodon and Jason Statham wrestle.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's all I want in my life.
Exactly.
Because I went through this period where I watched all of Jason Statham movies.
Yes.
And I realized they're not that much different. And
isn't it him in a car driving real fast?
You got it. And then I was really working on my Jason Statham like impression, and I can only do like one thing. And I don't know if you've ever seen a movie called Parker. It makes no sense
yeah.
while he makes Jennifer Lopez strip, and he says, "I need to know if you're wearing a wire." that's all I can say is Statham. But it makes no sense. But it's there.
It makes sense if you're on the marketing team cutting the trailer.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure that's just a device to get horny dudes to watch it.
Yeah.
See, but I want to watch it for Jason Statham. Am I the wrong target audience?
No, you're not. You're watching it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think my favorite Jason Statham film, we could call it a franchise because there's two, Crank.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All-time favorite.
Well, I don't know what was more impressive is when he was having sex with the lady on the racetrack. Or in front of the bus station. Or she got really excited when the horse jumped over her. I don't know what that's supposed to mean.
I think she's just supposed to be weird.
Okay.
Just straight up, she's a weirdo.
Because that movie is so batshit crazy that, I mean, so if your heart doesn't work, you can just use a car battery to restart it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's what I do.
Go try that at home.
I'm doing it. And then I'm going to make sure I say, Liv told me to do this. And then they'll be in my obituary. Author tells local idiot to jumpstart his heart.
I met you one time and I had that much influence
you
in
did.
Your life.
That's
I think
amazing.
That's real power.
You
that's
know,
real
like,
power.
Like a middle school teacher.
Yeah, yes. exactly.
You know what?
Exactly.
You did influence me. And, you know, she said I could do it and I did it. I'm in the hospital.
We've come full circle. Well, if you live, then you did do it and I wasn't wrong.
Yep. And then you proved us right. Anyways, back to what you do. Where can people find you online and buy your books?
Yeah, so I made it real simple. Everywhere online I exist is just livhaddon.com or at Liv Haddon or / Liv Haddon. And my name is L-I-V as in Victor. It's not Z. It's not Liz. It's Liv. And Haddon is H-A-D-D-E-N. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Awesome. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
You're awesome, by the way.
Oh, thanks. I had a good time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another fantastic interview at Denver Comic Con 2018. We had an amazing time, and we look forward to seeing you again next year.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Real Nerds Podcast. Real Nerds Podcast is a production of Nebulous Visions Multimedia. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill and Plan 9 Studios for our kick-ass theme song. Also, if you're in the Denver area and you're looking for a cool place to see movies, we see them at the Alamo Drafthouse in Littleton and now also in Sloan's Lake. Thank you to Colorado Coins, Cards, and Comics for supplying us with all our comic needs, especially you, Andrew. You know who you are. And a big shout out to James's mom. I'm giving you an electronic hug that you can feel through the airwaves. Thanks for listening, and have a nice day.